It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffing Fanny Show, episode 209.
Discussing South African science fiction and fantasy with Sarah Lotz, Lauren Bugis, and Alex Latimer.
Yep, I'm Sean.
I'm Julia.
And obviously our special guests today are Alex Latimer. You want to say a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm recovering from a cold, so if I sound a bit medicated, then that's the reason. But I'm a writer and an illustrator. I'm based in Cape Town. I think the reason I'm here primarily is because I wrote a novel called The Space Race, which is a South African novel, but I also write children's picture books and illustrate them.
Excellent, excellent. And our other guest, Lauren Bugis, hello.
Hi, I don't have any excuse for the way I sound. This is just the way I sound. I'm a writer, and I write comics and screenplays and mainly novels. And my most recent book is Broken Monsters, which is coming out in the U.S. in September. And I think I'm probably best known for The Shining Girls and Zoo City, time-traveling serial killers and Black Magic Johannesburg. Weird stuff.
Excellent, excellent. And the last guest is Sarah Lotz.
Hello, I'm a writer, a caffeine addict, and originally from Britain, actually, oddly enough, back in Britain at the moment. But my latest novel is The Three, and it's about, I suppose, plane crashes and evil children.
That's great. Excellent. So we're here to talk about just sort of generally South African science fiction, fantasy, all kinds of genre fiction, just kind of get a sense of the field. So I thought it would be a good idea to start by asking each of you how you actually got into genre fiction. So I guess we could start with you, Alex, since you're on my left. How did you kind of get into genre fiction?
I think it was – I've always wanted to write a novel, and then I had a whole lot of ideas – going around in my head, and then one sort of stuck out, and it wouldn't let go, so I sort of ignored it for a while, and then came back to it. And the idea was quite heavily science fiction. It wasn't really intentional on my part. I am a big fan of Kurt Vonnegut's science fiction, so that was a starting point for me in terms of getting really excited about writing when I was younger. I had grand plans to write sort of literary fiction, but we'll have to wait for that, I think. So it was just this idea that came out of the internet and a bit of research about South Africa, and that's what sparked it. Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. What about you, Lauren? How did you get into genre fiction as a writer or otherwise?
Well, I mean, it started with fairy tales and mythology. I used to love reading about the Egyptians and the Greeks and the Romans. But also my mom has to bear a lot of the blame because she got me into comics. She got me into ElfQuest and Dragonlance and Barbarella, which is where I got my sex education from. I read 2000 AD, what was really interesting about comics like 2000 AD is that they specifically deal with, they're always dealing with social issues, you know, so Judge Dredd is actually part of a totalitarian state, and there was very interesting political commentary happening, you know, in this kind of throwaway form. And of course, you know, Alan Moore wrote for, he wrote The Ballad of Halo Jones in 2000 AD. So that was a major influence, and that kind of got me into it. And when I started writing, I didn't specifically set out to write that. I just wrote something which interested me, which was kind of looking at a near future Cape Town and picking up on current trends like cool spotting and advertisers sponsoring artists, viral, I don't know, kind of nanotechnology. It just kind of interesting major themes in the world and how an apartheid system might arise again in a kind of future South Africa. And that became my first book, Moxieland. You know, I write the books I want to write, and people kind of define them in very specific genres afterwards, like, oh, well, this is urban fantasy or this is horror. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's great. I'm glad. I just kind of set out to write them.
Fair enough. And what about you, Sarah?
Well, I had... I think it's all down to my dad, really, because where I grew up, he had a massive library of books, and they were a great deal of them are science fiction and golden age science fiction as well. Like for a socialist, he was completely into Heinlein, which was weird, but it changes politics, and lots of Arthur C. Clarke. I remember very clearly being far too young and reading Rendezvous with Rama, for example. Philip K. Dick, grew up with him. And loads of horror as well. I mean, I read all the Stephen Kings when I was very young. I read like, and even the trashy ones like the James Herberts, they made a massive impression on me when I was a kid. Always knew I wanted to be a horror writer. And then weirdly, my first novel was actually, I don't know if it's weird because a lot of people, their first novels tend to be autobiographical. And mine was basically a semi-autobiographical account of a year I spent living on the streets of Paris being a beggar and a fire eater and a drug addict, basically. And it was only after I got that out of my system that I thought, oh, gosh, now, come on, you've got to write a novel with zombies in it. So, I mean, I always wanted to write a horror novel, and I suppose maybe my first novel was horror. It was certainly horror for some people, especially my parents. So, yeah.
Excellent. Julie, did you have a question you wanted to jump to?
Well, sure. I guess I think that I'm probably not atypical of our listenership in not really knowing anything at all about the overall state of South African literature and science fiction and fantasy in South Africa in general. I basically know about Lauren's books. I've recently read The Three by Sarah, and I've seen District 9, and that's pretty much it. I don't know anything. So I kind of wonder if you would tell me a little bit about what the genre is like over there and how it's changed in your lifetime. And I guess we'll go ahead and start with Alex again.
Yeah, for me, I think I've come to appreciate South African literature quite late in the game, so I can't really comment on how it's changed. I've struggled to find a lot of South African science fiction, actually. There's quite a lot of fantasy, and there's the sort of new wave of horror and zombies and all things wonderful in that direction. But it's quite strange, I think, for me to look around and see so little science fiction that is based in South Africa. I'm not sure what the reason is, but I'm hoping it'll change.
I think it's really interesting looking at Alex's career because he really broke out as a picture book illustrator and writer. And he had to do that internationally, I think. Alex, correct me if I'm wrong, yes. To really make an impact. That the same with genre fiction in South Africa, there really wasn't much of a picture book market. So you really have to get an overseas publisher to be able to make an impact. When I published Moxieland in 2008 in South Africa, it was the first time anyone had taken a risk on such a crazy book. I mean, it was a crazy book, and the original version was written in this kind of clockwork orange-style language. And after Zoo City won the Arthur C. Clarke Award and after the success of District 9, it feels like the market kind of really opened up. And I know with Sarah that they specifically spoke to her about writing the new Twilight. You know, they wanted her to write a YA series that could be the new Twilight. So suddenly the success of Harry Potter and Twilight and all of that stuff made a huge impact on the South African market. And we saw that there was actually an appetite for our stories. And it suddenly exploded. But I don't think, as much as Zoo City was an international success and that kind of showed people the way, it was as if we were all kind of in a glass room stumbling around. And it's just that Zoo City was the first one through the door that happened to kind of stumble against the door. And everyone else was like, oh, there's a door. Great. Let's go through. And I think genre fiction has really taken off since then.
I would have to say that that's a little bit of bollocks, because Zoo City made it because Zoo City was a brilliant novel. It wasn't just that it was one of South Africa's first major genre successes. It was an incredible novel. So I think you're being a bit falsely modest there. But I think there has been genre writing in South Africa for a long time. And it's... Nick Wood, who is not just a brilliant writer, he's got a brilliant website that lists all the genre writing that's been going on for comics, for example, that very little known but were being written a while ago. It's just that it never really hit the mainstream. And the science fiction that was coming into South Africa, especially during apartheid, was overseas, written by overseas, the big names. And in fact, it was quite interesting because it used to get smuggled in and it used to get judged on whether it was going to be banned just by the covers, which I thought was quite interesting. So you could get the most subversive sort of science fiction, sort of coming in that was basically, it was judged on its cover.
Can I tell my The Alien story?
Sure, go for it.
But I think Alex might want to say something first.
I just wanted to ask Lauren, just talking about the success of your books overseas, has that success reflected well in South Africa? I mean, what is the ceiling of book sales and the appetite for genre fiction here? And I think you're probably most qualified to answer, being the sort of queen of it all.
Do I get a crown? Where is my goddamn crown?
It's in the mail.
Okay, good. It's there. Yes, my sales in South Africa have been great, but as you know, in South Africa, if you sell more than 3,000 copies, you're a bestseller. And print runs are actually down in South Africa. I think there used to be kind of 2,000 to 3,000 copies for a print run, and now they're down to like 1,500. To 2000. It's hard out there for books. Ebooks are certainly changing the landscape. The Shining Girls has done well here. I got my bonus if I sold more than 8,000 copies, which is great. But it's really a tough market. And I think you need to be able to make it internationally to be able to make a living out of your writing, to be able to actually afford to pay the rent and feed the cat. And, if you're a Sarah, house horses, and a zombie, zombie army or whatever it is that she's doing in her basement, I'm not sure. But yeah, it's really tough out there. But I wanted to come back to kind of South African, there's a long history of genre fiction, and Nick Wood has done great articles on this, and you should really look up his website. And it dates back to, I think, to the late 1800s, where somebody wrote something about going to the moon. Alex, I think you might have something in common with that. But, J.M. Coetzee wrote Waiting for the Barbarians, which is effectively dystopian. It's a dystopian 1984-style book. So it's totally science fiction. And we have a long history of this. We have a long history of using allegory and imagination and crazy invented ideas as a way of kind of exploring where we are right now in the world and using it to hide political analogy. And, of course, the apartheid government was so dense that they didn't pick up on that. It had to be a book about apartheid or about kind of, race relations for them to pick up on that. Or really stupid stuff, like they banned Black Beauty because they thought it meant Black Beauty. it was just ridiculous. But my favorite story about the apartheid government and genre was during, I think, the late 80s, the TV series V aired in South Africa, and it was a mini-series. I think it was like 4 or 5 episodes. And the first 2 episodes aired in a primetime slot. I think it was Wednesday night at like 8 o'clock or something, which was when MacGyver and Ally McBeal and all those shows, that was the time slot. So V aired for two nights, and then suddenly it got bumped up to 11 o'clock at night, and it ran three nights consecutively. And I couldn't understand this, and I was a teenager, and I said to my parents, you know, why are they suddenly taking it off air? Why have they pushed it to this late time slot when I can't watch it? And my mom explained that it was because V had freedom fighters, and that was a very bad word in South Africa. You couldn't, you know, the government didn't want people to be thinking about freedom fighters and to have representations of a rebellion against the government. But I found out much later when I was fact-checking this for a talk that I gave in New Zealand that it was actually way worse than that, which is what happened was that our state president at the time, P.W. Botha, his nickname was the Big Crocodile, the Krokodil. And I don't know if you remember the TV series V, but the aliens pull off their faces to reveal that they're actually lizards beneath. And he was so vain that he thought this TV show was actually about him. And he put in a phone call to the head of the SABC that night, the first night the episode aired, and demanded that it be taken off air immediately. And, you know, that was the apartheid state. They were just completely insane. And they attacked the wrong things. But I think science fiction today is still a very interesting way of exploring these issues, which are, in South Africa, almost too big to talk about. It's such a complex, crazy country that sometimes you have to really twist reality to get a better perspective on it. That was an epic rant, sorry.
No, it's fine. No, it's great. I don't think I'd ever heard that. Just the idea that V would have been written about him. It's kind of hilarious.
You know, yeah. Well, I mean, we had sanctions against us, you know, and U2 was writing songs. So, maybe it wasn't that much of a stretch, but crazy. Completely insane.
That's fascinating. I don't know if I've mentioned it before. My grandma's actually from South Africa. Married a Yankee and then moved to the United States. She grew up out kind of, I guess, like on a woodsy sort of farmy areas. I don't really know where she's from in South Africa. This is something I really should ask her. But yes. her perspective is so very different because she wasn't in the city. Mm-hmm. And so she didn't have the urban experiences and get to see a lot of the things. She was sort of out, like she was out away from most of civilization living with her parents. So her perspective is a little controversial, I suspect, but she's, you know, she's my grandma, so I give her a little bit of a break, but, you know.
Well, the older generation often have controversial opinions about things that we take for granted.
True, that's true. You know, but very different, very different. She tells me things she did as a kid that just are funny only because nobody died, but are not so funny. Stories from grandma's old days, but yeah, she actually had that same experience where, you know, all these books were banned and she wasn't allowed to read all these books. And then when she moved to the United States, one of the things she did is she went and bought all of these books that she wasn't allowed to read. And she's like, I don't get it. What's the big deal about these books? So like, you know, Black Beauty, things like that. So random information. But in any case,
well, I mean, we only got television in 1976.
That's really scary. I've always found that scary. And I just find that, like, the fact that my husband hasn't ever seen, like, Star Trek, horrifying. And because I just, like, how can you not have had Star Trek in your childhood? That's, or Doctor Who. But then, I mean, like, I came to South Africa 20 years ago. So I had a different kind of perspective on it. Because all I knew about South Africa before I went there was that I honestly thought it was full of white Nazis. Who were absolutely horrible. And I mean, I was a teenager. I didn't have any, that was all I knew. So when I came to the country and had no money and ended up living in a township in just outside Pietermaritzburg, which was, I have to say, one of the best experiences of my life and a brilliant community. But I had absolutely no clue at the time I was doing it, that was illegal. That because I was white and, you know, basically moving into this area, that was, you know, not the normal thing to do. Mm. And then as you kind of, so I kind of was there just as apartheid was ending, which was a really fascinating time to be around. But yeah.
Mm. Well, one of the things I did want to kind of go back to, there is actually a science fiction I guess like a fan group, the Science Fiction and Fantasy South Africa, I think is just the name, the SFFSA, mm-hmm. Which supposedly has been around since 1969 and does have a short story competition. And I don't know how aware you all are of it. I'm very certain that most people in the U.S., for example, probably have never heard of this group. And yet they've been running this short story competition for, you know, the Nova Short Story Comp for a while. They have their own sort of like fanzine and everything. So it's I'm curious if you all have had any experience with this group, or if maybe they're just a lot smaller. I don't know. And anyone in particular want to jump in there? It looks like Lauren wants to jump in, so go for it.
Well, I actually judged the short story competition last year.
Oh.
So it is very small, and it's kind of, you know, it's fan-run. It doesn't really have a lot of funding. But it has been going for decades. It's, you know, they do what they can. I think what's been interesting, certainly, as we've been coming up as writers, I think, you know, my first encounter with Sarah's work was actually in an amazing horror magazine called Something Wicked, which was started by a guy called Joe Vaz and Bjorn Fenter. And it's this amazing magazine, and they did such a professional, beautiful job. They got funding from the National Arts Council to produce it. It's now online only. Unfortunately, it became too expensive to maintain. But the level of passion was just amazing. And to see these people pull together this really professional zine and to get really amazing writers. And Sarah wrote this crazy story, which you can access online, about a zombie slave Brad Pitt lookalike. you know, you can have your zombies custom fitted to be, you know, resemble whatever celebrity you like. And it was just so twisted and dark and amazing and fresh. And it was so exciting to see this coming out.
It's my fantasy, though. I was just writing it out. I wasn't really as disgusting. they really were amazing. I mean, I remember when I first heard about that, it was like, oh, my gosh, we got a horror magazine in South Africa. How brilliant is this? I couldn't believe it. And then I remember that I sent off the story and I didn't think anything of it. And then just after that, I got a call from Lauren, who I knew who she was because she was already like queen of the universe, even back in those days. I'll get you a crown. And she just on the strength of this story just asked me to come and write join her screenwriting gang. Is it a screenwriting gang? Is that the right word? Writing the science fiction cartoon. And you know, I'll forever be grateful for Something Wicked to Joe and Vianne for kind of starting something like this, which gave a platform for so many writers and the start of their career. I mean, it's incredible. And they started it from nothing at all. I think they sold their car, actually.
I mean, just to kind of bounce that question a little bit differently, in your experience as writers living and writing in South Africa, what has your experience been with local fandom? I mean, is there much of a fandom in South Africa in terms of genre fiction? I mean, are there conventions? These are somewhat basic questions, but it's not something that I think people talk about very often. Is what are the fans like? What kind of presence do they have in South Africa? Because as you've already mentioned, some of the success that you've talked about has had to be outside of the country, you'd had to sell internationally. But it seems maybe a little bit that's sort of pushing the other direction. Lauren, you had your hand up first, so why don't you jump in, and then we'll jump to Alex.
There are conventions. There's a very there's one called Rage, which is mainly a gaming convention. I went there when I was 17, and there is still a photograph out there somewhere, which I have to find and destroy, of me at 17 wearing a leopard print sewing costume as Chitara from Thundercats. But that was the first con I ever went to, and I think it might have even been the first year that it ran. But it's much more focused on games, whether that's tabletop or video games. And I don't think they really even have a literary or comic stream. I mean, they certainly sell the books and comics there, but they don't have any kind of, you know, activity or panels or anything. When I went to Worldcon for the first time in 2009 I think it was in Toronto that year, I met Charlie Strauss for the first time, and he was trying to explain fandom to me. And I was like, well, you know, I've met fans, you know, and I know people who read my books. And he's like, no, fandom is a completely different thing to fans. That it's organized, that people are incredibly passionate and enthusiastic, that it's this very tight, engaged community. And I don't think we have that here. I think we have an amazing literary community that's very supportive, thanks to websites like Books Live, which really promote South African literature. But we don't have enough genre writers. You know, we're a country of only 54 million people, and there are only a million people who buy books, full stop. They're mainly buying the Da Vinci Code and cookbooks. So maybe 100,000 buy literary books? I don't know. So we're very supportive of each other, but there's no real kind of genre-specific fandom.
And just to confirm, you said only about a million people in South Africa purchase books regularly.
Yep.
Wow. That's a very small number.
I think our illiteracy rate is something like 26%.
Really?
Yeah. We've got to understand, we're still crippled by what apartheid did to this country. You know, people... generations of people came through with inferior education on purpose so that they could be laborers. And, the apartheid government specifically structured it that way to force black people into a position where they didn't have opportunities. Mm-hmm. And you don't magically make that go away. There are still people living in poverty, in desperate poverty. There are schools which don't have textbooks. There are schools which don't have libraries. I think, I don't know my stats, so please don't quote me on this, but something like 80% of 80% of schools in South Africa don't have school libraries. And what I'll do is I'll go on to Africa, check later, and find the exact stats for you, and we can pop them up at the end of the podcast. But it's horrendous, you know, and we just don't have a reading culture here at the moment, just because of the inferior education, and now because there's so many distractions. But there are interesting things happening with cell phone novels and you know, people trying to use, I think ebooks will make a big difference because everyone has a cell phone. People might not have libraries, they might not have toilets at the school, but everyone has a cell phone. I think there are two cell phones for every person in South Africa.
Okay.
Again, there's a whole bunch of made up stats, which we're going to have to check.
That's a fair point. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's a very interesting set of, details about the reading culture. Its size, and obviously in relation to the culture that surrounds it. And then, of course, when you really think about it, it's like it's been, 20-something years since the fall of apartheid?
We just celebrated our 20th anniversary.
Yeah, so it's actually not even been that long when you really think about it.
It's not even one generation.
Yeah, not even one generation, so you're right. So, I mean, to sort of – that's a weird thing because I was born right like in the 80s, so that's not an experience. Like, I didn't remember any United States protests about that thing because I was too young. There were some, but I just wasn't around. So it's very interesting to sort of, as myself coming from a generation that is not directly tied to that moment in any way, and then having to realize that that there has been this change, but it is actually not some sort of like distant time, even though it sort of feels like it. And I imagine there's a very different sensation when you actually are from there and you actually experienced that period. It probably doesn't feel very distant at all. But in any case, I'm going to switch to Alex real quick to have you kind of talk about your experience, particularly since as we've already noted, you've written picture books for children. So you may have actually a very different connection to a different sort of fandom.
Yeah, well, all of my picture books are published overseas. So they do come around to South Africa, and then I do readings of them at schools and at book fairs and festivals and things. And that's quite a fun experience. And it's what I find, it's kind of this beginning, going back to the beginning of reading. In South Africa, as an author of a novel, getting to chat to children who don't come across stories and they don't come across people who will read them stories. Their teachers maybe don't have access to books. To be in a situation where you can, I suppose, contribute in some way, although it's a very big challenge. But it's this quite exciting time where, as writers of novels for grown-ups, it's kind of this it's a responsibility, but it's also the it's ensuring the future of writing in South Africa is starting at grassroots today and getting children reading and excited about reading. And I think what Lauren says about cell phone novels, there's very exciting organizations like Funza who put stories together for teens, that and they can read on their cell phones. They download bit by bit, day by day, and it's, yeah, I think that's quite an exciting thing, that as writers we're sort of on the train, but we're laying the track at the same time.
Interesting.
That's quite nice.
Yeah. Julie, you want to jump in there real quick?
So I was just poking around, and I found a website that says that 80% of schools lacked libraries in 2012. So I don't know what that number is now, but that's still a staggering amount of schools without libraries.
Yeah.
My question, though, that I wanted to ask was about what kinds of themes seem to come up a lot in the South African literature, and how apartheid has affected that, because I imagine that now that the door is open, and I think it takes time. I don't think that Lauren is being falsely modest in saying that her book was lucky in opening the door, because I think a lot of great books kind of like don't necessarily always make it. But that one of the things that was going for that is that the timing was it was the right time. People were ready to start actually dealing with some of those issues, which I think it can't happen the moment apartheid ends. It has to be a gradual process. So I was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about what kinds of themes you see the country as a whole still struggling with and emerging in the literature at any level, really. And I guess I'll start with Lauren.
I talked too much already. I think it's interesting because there are writers. I've seen two writers I know. Sarah is one of them. She writes a YA series with her daughter Savannah, who is 22 years old, and it's called the Deadland series. It's a zombie apocalypse which happens 10 years after apartheid. And Sarah always talks about how it's very throwaway and light and fun, and she just wanted to do a ridiculous YA, and it's just zombies. And it is all of those things. But it's also political in very interesting ways. And she denies it. But in the third series in the book, she deals with corrective rape. They deal with corrective rape, which is where it's a horrific phenomenon in South Africa, where homophobic men, specifically in the townships, will rape a lesbian to try and fix her. And it's just awful. It's the most horrifying thing. And there's no way to deal with that. It's the most, you know, if you read it in the newspaper, it's just gut-wrenching and heartbreaking, and it's awful. And yet Sarah tackles it in a YA. I mean, where else could you do that? And where else would this come in? The other writer who does this, who denies that his work's political at all, is Charlie Heumann, who's written a wonderful, crazy book called Apocalypse Now Now. Which is a crazy urban fantasy where there's a porn-dealing teenager who ends up falling foul of magical creatures and this whole kind of magical underworld. But it ties into an old apartheid chemical weapons program and ancient, you know, Khoi mythology, which were the original indigenous people of South Africa, and brings all of those things together. And it's so interesting and fascinating. And he has a strip club scene. It's a zombie strip club. And all the politicians are there, you know, getting nibbled on, and that's kind of their thing. And it's absolutely political, and I think Alex as well has also said that his book is not particularly political, but it is. You know, it's about an old apartheid space program, and there's an old, you know, ex-hardcore mercenary guy who's chasing our heroes. And it's fascinating to see that, and I think there is such a South African sensibility to all of this fiction. Which is very rooted in issues of social justice and the stuff that we're surrounded by every day that we can't look away from. So I think there's a knee-jerk reaction among South African writers, and maybe especially genre writers, to deny that our work is political, because politics is seen as very tedious, and for a long time there was a trend that South African novels had to be political. If you were a writer under apartheid and you weren't addressing the political state, you know, that was morally indefensible. You had to deal with the current situation. So I think people kind of associate it very much with kind of apartheid literature and very heavy-handed. But I think there's a way to engage with politics in the world in a really fun, crazy, interesting, intense way with giant mantis mecha and zombies and, you know, crazy apartheid space programs. And that's actually maybe a more interesting and more useful way of engaging than strictly realist fiction.
So on that note, since you've actually mentioned two of the folks that happen to be here, Sarah hasn't said anything for a bit, so I wanted to jump to you, Sarah, and maybe have you kind of respond to that idea, this idea of the political, either in your own work or more in a general sense about literature in South Africa generally.
Well, I kind of have to agree, and I think that I did get a bit defensive about the whole political thing because a while ago I wrote a crime novel, and I said that my intention for it was it was set in South Africa, and it was to be purely entertaining because how I grew up and how a lot of people I know grew up, to get, you know, because like Lawrence touched on the absolute lack of readers we've got in the country, the lack of the reading culture. I started off by being entertained by books and by, you know, the brilliant stuff that Alex is doing with his kids' books. That's how I started, with just pure fun. So that's what I set out to do. And then I got absolutely lambasted for it, actually, by I think it was just at that time sort of where there was still this sort of sense that feeling that that. You know, South African novels should be very serious. They should be able to be sort of studied in universities. They should take life very seriously. And so I think that's where my personal defensiveness comes from. And later, and but I actually don't think that it's possible to write a novel that is set in the country without being political. I think that a particular society where, I mean, the political life, the social life is all around you. You can't pretend, for example, that it's not happening. It's the rich-poor divide, for example, is just it's just horrendous. And, you know, where now I'm in the UK just for a bit, and I can tell you now, I can I haven't got a clue what's going on in the government. I haven't got a clue what's going on socially, to be honest, and I'd never know because it's not all around you. So I think that that is I don't think Savannah and I could have written a novel that was that didn't include some kind of social criticism in it. And even the kind of crazy horror novels I write with Louis Greenberg. And we specifically set out to write the first South African horror novel where we would be basically having a laugh. We did it for our own amusement to start with. And it ended up being like basically a treatise on consumerism. And so I think that if you do have a bit of a social conscience and you do want to tell the truth and you do want to be honest in your writing, you can't help but for these things to come out of it.
I'm assuming you were talking about the mall.
Yes, the mall.
Yeah. And it takes place in a very scary mall that I would never want to be stuck in ever.
No, me neither.
No.
But it's interesting because Sarah writes as S.L. Gray with Louis Greenberg, and the horror novel is The Mall, which of course deals with consumerist culture and this rich-poor divide. But the other books in the series go even deeper into South African society, but also universal issues. The Ward is set in, is it Barrack Gwinnett Hospital, which is one of our biggest public hospitals, and it's just the horror of the public hospital system and how it's not coping and how it's straining and how people end up there and what they're looking for. And it's very interesting how, and the last one is The New Girl, which is set in the private education system, which is even more of a monstrosity, actually, than a state hospital. So it's very interesting to see them kind of teasing out these different themes and issues. And of course, you know, this stuff is very site-specific, but it's also universal. I mean, these things are, you know, Alex's book, for example, could just as easily have been set in the Ukraine. You know, it could have been a secret Russian program to try and get to the moon. So, you know, at the end of the day, fundamentally, we're all human. But it's nice. I think the South African stuff, people already respond to it because it's something unusual. It's something that they haven't seen before. And it's nice to be able to enter this kind of slightly alien landscape, which is just familiar enough for you to feel at home.
Well, Alex, did you actually want to jump in on some of this idea about the political in either your own work or maybe more generally, kind of bouncing off ideas that have already been presented?
Yeah, I think I think that the longer I sit with my novel and look at it, more political I see it being. I think in the process I set out to just write something fun, just like Sarah was saying, that I was, it's kind of this inescapable reality that comes through in any writing you do, if you're a South African, I think, if you have a connection to the people and to the land, it's totally part of us, and that's, yeah. So I think when writers say they don't want their novels to be political, it is, I think it's a bit like saying your novel's not science fiction. It's trying to get away from pigeonholing it as a certain genre that a lot of people might find distasteful. Not these people, though. Who knows?
Well, I think there is that knee-jerk reaction in South Africa that, you know, I've had people turn around to me and say, oh, well, your book is science fiction. Well, congratulations, but I don't read that stuff. You know, so that, of course, you know, for all that we don't really have a fandom, we certainly have genre snobbery.
And I think when you said earlier that there's 100,000 people who buy literary fiction.
Look, I made that up completely.
Well, I'm quoting you on it. So.
No, don't, please, God. I just found a stat about actual illiteracy, and it's apparently only 7%. So, you know, you should not listen to anything I say.
Well, let's just assume that not a lot of people buy literary fiction.
Yeah.
Let's put that number at 100,000. Within that, you're competing with all sorts of fiction and
Dan Brown, 50 Shades.
Exactly, and I think as soon as you start adding labels that are a little bit either controversial or historically unacceptable, then your odds of selling books in within that range is reduced. You just end up selling 50 copies to your friends.
Except that I think that young people are responding. You know, I think that that people are actually excited by this kind of fiction. I know that Charlie Human was telling me that he had got a letter from a high school student, 15 years old, who said that he desperately wanted to do his book report on Apocalypse Now, Charlie's novel. And the teacher was like, no, absolutely not, under no circumstances. And in his email, he said, well, you know, screw the teacher, I'm doing it anyway. And, you know, people are excited to see South Africa represented in this kind of way, but it's how to reach that market. It's how do you get to kids outside of school libraries? My library stat, by the way, was fairly accurate. But, you know, it's the fact is that books are very expensive in South Africa. We need pulp. We need cheap, crappy, fall apart after one read, you know, trashy paperbacks that they sell in the supermarkets and they sell in the spaza shops and they sell for, you know, a book right now is the price of a steak dinner and a glass of wine. So why would you buy a book? You know, and especially if that's what you earn in a day, you know, that's what a cleaning lady will earn in a day. A cleaning lady will earn 150 rand and books are usually 150 to 200 rand. So a cleaning lady is going to spend her day's salary on a book. It's not going to happen. We need books to be cheap and accessible, and I am all for ebook piracy for people who can't afford it otherwise. The guy at my brother's advertising agency who came up to me and said he loved my books and he pirated all of them, that guy can go to hell because he can afford to buy books. But, you know, if schools and townships started pirating books, I think that's not a bad thing. And there's actually a program, it's not piracy, it's donated books, but it's called World Reader. And they specifically get tablets to kids in, I think they're specifically targeted in Eastern Africa. But, you know, they get authors to donate their books. And look, these people are never going to buy your work anyway. They just don't have the resources. But at least this way you're encouraging a culture of reading and literacy and getting people engaged in stories and having people respond to stories that they care about. As you said, Sarah, you know, you read for entertainment and you read for the love. And, you know, you can move on to Dickens and Tolstoy much later down the line. But right now, if Spud, which is one of South Africa's biggest sellers, which is a book about a high school student, you know, if that's what it takes to get kids reading, then awesome. Fantastic. If 50 Shades is what it takes, that's fine. But I think genre is in a very exciting place where it can actually crack through some of those barriers and get people reading really engaging stuff, which still engages with the issues.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's how Fenzo did so well. I mean, with the cell phone novels is they deliberately, and they also do novels as well. And what they did is they did literally the jump from, say, what's going on in the soap opera, and basically did that in fiction. So it starts off like you're watching a soap opera, then you're reading one, and then you move on. And then you've written for them. Hey, Lauren, did you do a story for them, for Fenzo?
No, I did Sam Wilson and I did a story for the original project, which looked,
that's
the
right.
original cell phone novel project, which was Yevor.mobi.
What's so brilliant about it is you write, and I did a zombie thing for them, and you get the kids responding and talking about the story, and you know you can see how many readers there are and how they're engaging with the story, and it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, really, I've never got such incredible criticism in my life. Some of it was very harsh, but I'm getting used to it. But that to me is really exciting, and I am absolutely in agreement with you about the. About the piracy. I think we should, I mean, I'm against
or maybe, it. Maybe.
Yeah, we need maybe to call it a different piracy. Word. Yeah, we need, that's the wrong word. That's the wrong word. Yeah.
But I think, you know, like World Reader, you know, donated ebooks.
Exactly.
Or books where you release the rights because you know that that's not a market that can afford it. And as long as you can control that and target it specifically, I think that's because you want people to still value books. So maybe yes. Piracy is not the best way because then it's free and it means nothing.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to add was when Sam Wilson and I were writing a short story for the cell phone, and it was like the original kind of Victorian serials where it was very short and we would pick up every day. So it was kind of 300-word chapters and it would end on a cliffhanger and you would get that on your cell phone every day. And the story was 10,000 words and we got 30,000 words in comments from kids.
Yeah.
And they corrected our grammar because we didn't have an editor, you know, and writers really need editors, let's face it.
Yeah.
So we just kind of, you know, spell-checked each other. But there were the kids correcting our grammar in text speak. They were like, lol, you screwed up, you know, smiley face. And I was like, oh, my God, it was amazing. So, you know, we think that this is all rotting kids' minds and, you know, text speak and Facebook and cell phones and everything is destroying the English language, but it's not. These kids were super, you know, well-connected and interested, and they knew what they were talking about. And these were low-income kids. These were kids with, you know, specifically targeted low-income kids at poorer schools, and they were coming back and fixing our English. It was great. It was amazing.
That is kind of awesome. The interactiveness is really, really, really interesting. Technology is wonderful. It can do a lot of really amazing stuff. And especially with ebooks, because the delivery systems for ebooks means it's a lot easier to get works to people who may not have things like e-readers or may not have access to bookstores. If they have a cell phone, they can read a book on their cell phone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which is really interesting. So just to kind of jump back really quick, we've talked a lot about literature, and I know, Lauren, you've worked in television, and so you may have something to say, and I'm not sure whether Sarah and Alex have had any dealings with film, but obviously there are examples now of great works of South African science fiction and films that, you know, obviously Neil Blomkamp, who's done District 9, and then the latest, which was not in South Africa, would be Elysium. And I'm curious, how has film sort of grown in your experience, and is it at all having an impact on the sort of awareness of genre fiction there? And I guess, Lauren, technically, since we can start with you, since I kind of name checked you.
Well, I think Elysium is very much, I mean, it's fundamentally about South Africa. You know, that's fundamentally a South African film. It's about the have-nots and the rich who live in this wonderful gated community, which happens to be off-planet, who have access to all the medical care and legal recourse and all the rest. You know, if that's not South Africa today, I don't know what is. But the film industry here struggles. You know, the arts in South Africa generally struggles. We have to make it overseas. Charlize had to go to Hollywood to make it. Neil Blomkamp had to go to Hollywood to make it. And become, you know, besties with Oh, God, who made Lord of the Rings?
Peter Jackson.
Yes, he had to become besties with Peter Jackson and hang out with him in the swimming pool, and that was how you get success, is you have to break out. And it's very frustrating. There just isn't enough of an audience here. Our top grossing local film is a very slapdash, broad, painful comedy series. You know, it's kind of, I guess, the equivalent of Madea.
The Tyler Perry stuff, yeah.
The Tyler Perry. It's our Tyler Perry. It's a white guy, but it's, you know, it's Tyler Perry humor. It's really dumb and quite offensive. And that's our top grossing South African film. Science fiction in film, it's too expensive. You know, we shoot a lot here. They're shooting Homeland here at the moment. Black Sails, the pirate series, is being shot. If you drive out to the Widelands, you pass the two big pirate ships on the side of the highway. But we can't afford to do our own stuff. It's quite sad. But it's interesting to see, you know, there's some great examples. There's a music video for a band called Lark, called Trixie. I think what Spook Mutombo, the musician, is doing. You know, there's some interesting music videos. Obviously, De Antwoord, but I also think they're assholes, so I don't want to promote them too much. And actually, Charlie Human had a short film based on a short story of his. I can't remember the title now, but it was really well made. It was made by film students, and it was just fantastic. It was awesome.
Excellent. What about you, Alex? Did you have a perspective on film at all?
Not really in South Africa. It's quite frustrating. I've had a lot of people come to me who've read my book and say it should be a movie. And that's great, and I've looked into it.
Including me.
Yes. Including Lauren. It's just a dead end, unfortunately, unless you can get hold of Neil Blomkamp and get him to do it. It's hard work. And I think the having special effects in a movie will limit its production here. It's sad, but that's the way it is, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Sarah? Any thoughts?
We've had a couple of horror movies that have been made here that have sort of, I think they've trickled over internationally, but they haven't done very well. There was one, I think it's called Night Drive, which is a gore fest set on people going on a safari and encountering some rather nasty night drivey things as you do. I would really love to see. I'm a big fan of Nollywood and everything that's going on there. I mean, I think the fact that you can make movies sort of with a camcorder in your sitting room on a very tight budget. I mean, I think quite a lot of it is absolute rubbish, but there's some really quite exciting stuff coming out as well, including, some science fiction stuff, which is coming out of there. So I think it is all to do with budget. It is all to do with the fact that we've got absolutely bugger all funding for the film industry. So, it's people aren't going to work for nothing.
We should probably get you guys to just take a moment to tell us where to find you, you know, any last thoughts you might have, that kind of thing. So...
Can we also talk about other South African genre fiction that you should that you have to check out?
Yeah, yes. So I'd actually love for every one of you to end this by telling us first where we can find you and your work, and then also giving us at least a couple of recommendations for South African work that we should be checking out that aren't yours.
Yep.
Aww.
So,
well, because we want to read yours, but we want to have that door open for us, too.
No, I know. I'm kidding. I know.
Fair enough. So why don't we start with you, Alex? Where can people find you on the internet and, you know, recommend some work to people?
Yeah, people can find me at alexlatimer.co.za. And I just want to say something quickly as well before we end.
Sure.
Just in terms of science fiction in South Africa. For my novel, I did some research into South Africa's nuclear weapons program, and I went back onto that website today, and it's actually, there's so much more information. There's information coming to light about these shady, strange apartheid dealings where we had nuclear weapons and sort of working with Israel and finding ways to launch them. testing them in the Indian Ocean, there's just so much strange fodder for science fiction here. And I think as time goes on, there's going to be more and more of this sort of secret classified information coming to light. And I just hope that there will be people to take it and run with it and to turn it into something amazing. Because I think it'll be, it's kind of just this mind-blowing, it feels like a fiction novel as is. You probably don't have to do too much to it. Yeah.
Could you give me the link to that later so I could put in the show notes?
Yeah, sure.
And just as a random fact, in case people didn't know, the scene in District 9 where they do all of the it's just torture, but they're like doing experimentation on the aliens was actually filmed in an old nuclear like chemical weapons facility that from apartheid. So
I think all that stuff that you hear that sounds a little bit untrue, it's probably true. But just check it first.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but yeah, I'll make sure to put that in the show notes.
Like Lauren's stats.
Yes. Yes. Make sure I have those too to make sure I can have as many.
Yeah, I've actually been taking notes this whole time, so most of the things that you guys have mentioned, I have links for.
Excellent.
But
I
don't know the particular site that Alex was talking about, so if you want to send us a link, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Sure.
Perfect. And then, what works would you recommend?
I'm going to let Lauren handle this because she's going to go through everything that I'm going to go through. So over to you, Lauren.
No, come on. Your personal recommends. Where have you read that has excited you?
I haven't actually been reading a lot of genre fiction at the moment. I've been reading a lot of Diane Auerbach's work. If you can get hold of that, it's kind of a bit scary. I think that's... For me, Home Remedies was her writing a real-life horror, and that, for me, is the most horrific. It's bringing horror into your daily life in a real way and not in a supernatural way. And it still haunts me, and if you want to be haunted by it, then Home Remedies by Diane Auerbach is the thing to read.
Excellent. All right, Lauren, I guess that's your cue. Where can people find you and obviously recommend some stuff?
I'm on www.laurenbeukes.com, which is B-E-U-K-E-S, rhymes with mucus. And I'm on Twitter every day, unfortunately, at Lauren Beukes. Recommendations is like a mile long. The Space Race is the most wonderful, crazy caper of a novel, which is dark and light and has lovely insight into people, but it just kind of races you along through this kind of, you know, nuclear space program, which has been resurrected to so that these crazy fundamentalist Afrikaners can establish themselves in a new fatherland on the moon. And it's just completely mad and wonderful and brutal and great. It's super fun to read. Sarah Lutz is the three. Sarah Lutz's The Three is just amazing as well. She's one of our most prolific writers. I can't tell you how talented she is, and she will try and fob this off and tell you that no, she's a hack and she writes trash, and she doesn't. She writes incredibly engaging, smart, interesting, fun stories, and she's an incredible storyteller. The Three is four different plane crashes around the world. There are three survivors who are all children, and the whole world just kind of falls apart around this. And it's so interesting because there are all these different perspectives. It's kind of, it's almost done World War Z style, where it's very journalistic and kind of collating all these different sources from, you know, some of the survivors to the last phone calls made to, you know, this crazy fundamentalist preacher. It's just fascinating and amazing and intense and interesting. And it's set in Japan and the UK and America and South Africa. And just her world building is intense. It's incredible. But she also writes as S.L. Gray with Louis Greenberg, and she writes these amazing, dark, smart, interesting, intense horrors. And she also writes with her daughter Savannah Lutz as Lily Hearn and writes the YA zombie apocalypse series Deadlands, which is, again, just super fun, but deals with intense social issues, but is also this kind of crazy love story, you know, romance triangle, but then also lots of zombie action and kick-ass girls and just cool. It's just really cool, and it's totally the antidote to Twilight. Charlie Human's Apocalypse Now Now, urban fantasy set in South Africa in Cape Town. A porn-dealing schoolboy finds out that his girlfriend has been kidnapped and finds this magical glowing tooth, and it takes him to very, very dark places. Just a fun, rollicking romp and just mental. It's a mental book. It's wonderful. Louis Greenberg writes this himself. He's got a book called Dark Windows, which is out, which is set in a very strange and unlikely future South Africa where, very creepily, a group of the political party which has taken over is, I think they're called Gaia Peace, and they're a very, you know, they're into Reiki and hot stone therapy and meditation circles, and that has solved crime in South Africa, or has it? Dun, dun, dun. So it's a very interesting book with this, you know, wild premise. But, I mean, he writes absolutely beautifully, and it's intensely about human relationships and again, kind of taking this reality that we have to live with of crime in South Africa and just twisting it a little bit. And I know there are upcoming writers like Alex Smith and Sally Partridge is writing a genre novel. The magazine you should check out is Something Wicked. There's a horror anthology, which I can't remember the name of, Bloody, what's it called, Sarah?
Bloody Parchment, and then Bloody Harvests.
And then Bloody Parchment, Bloody.
But yeah, Bloody, yep. Bloody Harvest, and then, and that's by, I think that's edited by Noreen Dorman, who's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And then there's Jungle Jim,
obviously, yep.
That does a lot of, like, pulp fiction. Mm-hmm. And the Alex Smith book you're talking about is Devil Skeen and Dear Love, which is like a dark sort of set in Cape Town, but it's a dark, it's a very kind of Roald Dahl-ish-y kind of dark, twisty tale. It's beautifully written and very creepy. And then her partner, Andrew Solomon's bringing out Tokolosh Song, which it was a finalist in the Terry Pratchett Award, which is a really gorgeous novel. Obviously, Louis's book is brilliant. There's also Edith Bulbring's bringing out a YA dystopian novel. She writes a lot of really, really brilliant and funny YA fiction, and also sort of middle grade fiction. She's absolutely terrific. And I really do have to mention that Broken Monsters is coming out by our very own Lauren Bukis, rhymes with mucus, in July. Is that right? It's July here, isn't it?
It's July in South Africa, yeah? In the UK. Right. September in the States.
Is anyone there? July in South Africa. Yeah, okay, which is, I was very lucky enough to read the early manuscript of it, and it is one of the best novels I've ever read, and you will not get it out of your head. And there is a character called TK in this book, which he's practically living in my head now. He kind of follows me around, haunting me. It's got some of the best writing I've ever read in it. And definitely buy Alex's book, because it's absolutely terrific. I can't wait for your next book, Alex. Hurry up.
But also, I want to add Diane Auerbach.
He's not talking to me.
Diane Auerbach's amazing, and her short stories are just absolutely incredible and kind of get into speculative stuff. As Henrietta Rose Innes's Nineveh. Very strange. And they're both super award-winning. You know, Diane's up for the Kane Prize this year. Henrietta won it a few years ago for a kind of post-apocalypse Cape Town short story. So it really does feel like there's an explosion right now, and that there's so much talent coming forward. There are upcoming new writers like Liam Kruger, who has just written a beautiful short story on the rumpus.
He's amazing. And Miranda Sherry.
Miranda Sherry, she's got a book called Black Dog Summer, which is coming out in the UK in July, which kind of deals with African magic. It's kind of, what was that book about the girl who was killed and she watches from heaven? It's The Lovely Bones set in South Africa, about
Bones.
A farm murder.
Yeah.
So it's The Lovely Bones in South Africa about a farm murder, but tied in very much kind of African mythologies and magic and spirituality. And, of course, Sam Wilson, who's written some fantastic short stories so far, and he's hopefully got a novel coming out soon. But, you know, you can find a lot of his stuff in the Porno Kitsch anthologies, the Pandemonium anthologies. They've been incredible supporters of South African talent.
That is a lot of stuff we all have to read.
I know, right?
So, you hear that, listeners? You don't get to sleep for the next 6 months. You're just going to read nonstop. Don't go to work. Well, maybe go to work so you can afford the books that you're going to have to read. But, yeah. So, excellent. That's all. I mean, that is a lot of really, really amazing stuff that we all get to check out because I didn't even realize there was that much. So, whew.
Well, a lot of it hasn't made it out of our borders, you know. You have to have a super agent, and Sarah and I do.
Well, I'm going to have to be rich and solve this. I'm just going to have to buy out, you know, Random House or some big publisher, and it's just going to be, yeah, this is my fantasy world. It may not happen. Yeah. I went to the wrong profession to take over a publishing house. And Sarah, you did not say where people could find you, so if you want to let everybody know real quick.
Oh no, I'm just eating a wine gum. So it's on Twitter, it's SarahLotz1. Oh, it's at SarahLotz1. I'm new to Twitter. I don't really understand it.
Do you have a website?
Yes. SarahLotz.com.
Sarah, and it's Lots with a Z, just so everybody knows. So we'll make sure to put that all on the show notes. Well, awesome. Well, okay. So, well, thank you, Julia, for being my my co-ninjas on this.
Sure. I don't know that ninja enters into it, but I'm certainly happy to help with things.
Sure.
I'm not doing anything in stealth, and I don't condone violence, so I'm gonna back away from the ninja label.
Oh.
Well, I have to point out that Alex is one of Alex's best, most awesome picture books that he's written out of the scores that he has is The Boy Who Cried Ninja, which is awesome, and you should get it right away. It's a wonderful, fun, hilarious book.
Mm, it really is.
That's an adorable title. I love it already.
That's an adorable book.
Well, excellent. Well, thanks all of you for coming on and taking the time of your day to talk to us about all of the interesting stuff we've just sort of tackled. So thank you, Alex, for giving us your time.
Sure. Great to be here. Thanks.
Thank you, Lauren, for the same.
Thank you. It was lovely.
Yeah. And thank you, Sarah, for the same.
Thank you very much. It was awesome.
Perfect. Everyone who's listening, go check out the show notes. There'll be a lot of stuff in there. So do make sure you go buy basically every book that was mentioned today. Because that they're good. So, and on that note, awkward ending and scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I pass in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.